Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard W. Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he's written 10 books about video poker, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Richard W. Munchkin has played blackjack, backgammon, and poker professionally and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. This is Bob. Richard's here. And we're joined in studio with Bob Nersessian, top player's lawyer. He was on less than 2 months ago. We had lots of favorable response. We have no limit to our listeners who want free legal advice. And so Bob is back again. So we're going to get to his segment earlier, or in a few minutes. And before we're going to talk about some other things, and knowing Bob, it wouldn't surprise me if he jumps in before he's introduced properly. Last week we talked about CTRs and STRs, currency transaction reports and suspicious transaction reports. Richard told us what they were, and somebody sent him an email and said, you said it wrong. So, Richard,
right.
What happened?
I have a correction to make. So one of the things that I said was that the CTRs did not go to the IRS, and one of our listeners, WRX, pointed me to the Treasury Department website, which says that while the Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network has overall responsibility, the Internal Revenue Service collects, stores, and maintains the currency and suspicious activity reports. And it does say that currency transaction reporting has a key role in tax administration, including audits and criminal investigations. So that just wanted to clear that up.
So the CTRs do go to the IRS.
Yes, but now, Bob, you mentioned that you file or they file several CTRs every week for you. Has that ever led to an audit for you?
I've been audited. it's almost as much fun as a root canal. One time I was audited, they say, we think you owe $1,800. And I said, where do I sign? I just want to be over with. And so if I could get rid of them for $1,800, that was fine. Another time they wanted more, and so we had to go into and fight them a bit for it. But I doubt if the CTRs themselves did. I report millions of dollars of W-2Gs every year. And so it's easy for them to conclude that anybody who has that many W-2Gs somewhere along the line past whatever the daily limit was for the CTR.
Sure. Yeah.
So that wouldn't be a big deal. Last week, I also spoke about casino drawings. And what we were talking about are the drawings that happen weekly where you earn the tickets during that week. For example, at the Palms drawing, which is going to happen tomorrow night, and Saturday night, it is based on how much you've played since the drawings after last Saturday night's drawings. And so, but there's another kind of drawing which is common in many casinos, and that is it's a monthly drawing, and you play and you earn tickets for however much you play, and you can put your tickets in whenever you want. They might have every Friday night drawings, and if you want to put it in the first Friday, you can, or you want to put it in the second Friday, you can. So the strategy there is a lot different than if you have to do it during the week. Now, generally speaking, if you don't care when you do your play during that month, you get better odds in those drawings if you do it the first week of the month.
I would think so, unless it has a holiday weekend involved.
Probably even then, because everybody else has is going to be earning more tickets and stuff. So but maybe if the holiday is on a Friday, possibly. But like if your normal play is $30,000 coin in for a casino or $300,000 or whatever it is, if you can do it in the first week and then dump all your tickets in that barrel, that's probably maximizing your drawing chances. If you've spread out that much play over the course of 4 weeks and put it in the last, the competition's going to be stiffer.
Makes sense.
Especially in the casinos that give free tickets away regularly. There are some times where anybody who swipes their card gets 10 free tickets every day. And if you have 1,000 tickets, well, that might be a lot in a casino where they don't give free tickets away, but that's only as much as 100 people who get free tickets. And there are several hundred people getting all these free tickets. It's like you don't have a big chance anymore. So if you're a small player, go for the casinos, which give away lots of free tickets, because your free tickets are, they'll give you as many as they give anybody else. You won't have a good chance, but that'll be your best chance. If you're a big player, then you want to go to the casino drawings where they don't have drawings, or they don't have free tickets,
yeah.
Because that way you can throw your bankroll at the drawing and hopefully win it.
Makes sense.
One of our, on a monthly basis, we have Greg Brown from videopoker.com. He's going to be on in a few minutes, and he's going to be telling us about a video poker tournament that is going to happen this Sunday at the South Point. Now, this is a joint sponsorship between videopoker.com and the South Point. And so Greg is going to be telling us about this event that's happening at the South Point, and they're even going to let me participate in this. Greg, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hello. Thank you.
So I was mentioning to the listeners that there is this tournament this Sunday. Tell us about it, and are they invited?
Yes, everybody's invited. We it's a videopoker.com members tournament. You can be a regular basic free member to play. Everybody's invited. We're capping it at 360 players. We have about 300 people signed up so far. But if you're in the area and need something to do on Sunday, come over and play in the tournament. And then that evening we have a free buffet and wine and beer for all our members. And we'll give away T-shirts and some other fun stuff like that.
Is this what is the cost for this tournament?
So the actual video poker tournament is $50 entry fee, and 100% of the entry fees get returned to the players. We have a $5,000 first prize, and then we're going to divide up the remaining pot with the 29 people. So we have 30 people in the finals.
Okay, so this is a speed tournament, meaning that you play for 10 minutes as fast as you can, and if you're a fast player and can get in lots of hands, that gives you an advantage over your slower neighbor who can't get so many hands.
Yep.
And this
That's correct.
And this is also on triple play machines.
Mm-hmm.
And triple play is unusual in a video poker tournament, but since videopoker.com is sponsored by Action Gaming and triple play is basically their game,
yep.
It's not a big surprise that they're having a triple play tournament. The game's going to be double bonus, 10-6, I think.
Yep.
And they've asked me to give a class in this. So at 10:30 Sunday morning, I'm going to be giving a class on how to do well in a video poker tournament. It's free to the first 200 people to get there, and because that's how big the room is.
Mm-hmm.
It is upstairs. To get there, you take the escalator that's in front of the gift shop. And it's right at the top of it. It's the Brunswick Room. And the tournament may sell out. There are 300 reservations. There's only 360 spots. So if you think you want to join, it's probably makes sense to get there early, come and listen to the tournament. It's allowed to listen to the tournament even if you're not going to be in the event.
Yep. And registration starts at 9 o'clock. So if you haven't RSVP'd on our site, You can just come to the South Point and get there early, like Bob said, and register and pay your $50, and then you're welcome to play in the tournament and come to the what we call the after party.
All right. Now, the registration, now the tournament itself is going to be right next to the showroom, between the showroom and the registration. Now, the sign-ups, will they be upstairs where the class is going to be, or will they be in the tournament area itself?
No, the sign-up will be, there'll be some tables right on the north wall of that area you spoke of. So when you come into the north doors in front of the South Point, just take a right, and the tables will be right there.
Okay, the north doors are the ones right by the place where they sell the show tickets. Those are the north doors.
I think
doors.
So, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, very good. So, yep. Good.
So go online, go to videopoker.com if you're going to come and play some triple play and get used to the game, and Bob will give you all the pointers 10:30 Sunday before the tournament starts at noon.
Very good. Is there anything else okay. you want to tell us?
No, we have a we have a contest on the site right now that ends tomorrow. So if you want to go play Dream Card Poker, you can do that for one more day and try to win a $500 gift certificate.
And how does a Dream Card tournament work? You play for 200 hands or some such number?
Yeah, it's actually 100 hands, unlimited number of sessions, and just keep playing as long as your heart's desired.
So if you do not have a life, you can play as many 100 hand sessions as you like, and eventually you're going to get a good one and win the tournament. Is that
well,
fair?
I don't know. There's only one day left, and we have people playing 50, 60 hours during the week. So, but you never know. You hit a couple good hands, and you can go right up the leaderboard.
Well, that's right. Delt Royals just go a long way on those. Oh, actually, though, but Delt Royals are not that difficult in Dream Card.
Right.
They're a lot more common in Dream Card than they are in regular. So maybe you need two Delt Royals in 100 hands. That shouldn't be too tough, huh?
No problem.
All right, Greg. We'll see you Sunday.
Okay, we'll see you Sunday.
Thanks a lot. Good. Videopoker.com is the people who put out the Video Poker for Winners software. They subsidize it, and so I'm very grateful for that. Richard, why don't you tell us about Bob Nersessian?
Okay. Bob Nersessian is an attorney and an advocate for the players. He is also the author of the book Beat the Players, and welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thank you so much for having me here, Richard and Bob. Always enjoy your company and your listeners, too.
Good. Well, we've had a lot of really, really good response, a lot of questions from our listeners. So, actually, why don't we jump right in?
You first or me? I don't care.
I'll go first.
All right.
I guess what the first thing that people really want to know about is, because we talked a lot about getting, approached by security and casinos in Nevada, that kind of thing. They want to know about Indian casinos. Do we have any rights at all, And does it vary from state to state?
It varies from tribal land to tribal land.
Okay.
So you can get two different casinos in the same state run by two different tribes who are operating under different scenarios. A perfect example is last week, might have even been this. Recently... are you familiar with the Einbinder case?
Yes.
Okay. The Einbinder case has a set of facts that the Nevada Supreme Court has addressed and said that is not cheating. An Indian casino in Michigan recently convicted a patron for the exact same circumstances in the tribal court after arresting him for cheating.
For those of our listeners who don't know what the Einbinder's situation is, approximately what are we talking about? Is this blackjack?
It's Einbinder itself was a blackjack game, but the question was, is hole carding, which is seeing the dealer's card because of bad card protection by the casino, and signaling on the table, that is telling somebody else on the table what the hold card is so that they can play, cheating? Generally, there will be a BP and a flat bettor, and it's the flat bettor who's getting the card.
BP is big player.
Right. So that's Einbinder. The Nevada Supreme Court looked at those facts and, despite a conviction in the court below, ruled, I think I'm almost quoting here, "We see nothing here that violates the cheating statute," and reversed the conviction. But here's an Indian casino that just took the exact same set of facts, and even with the confusion and ambiguity that would have been foisted on them by the other decision of a highest court of a state and the most respected gambling state in the country, this Indian casino had a judge rule that it was cheating and convicted criminally, because they are a municipality in their own right as Indians, a federal municipality, I guess, and convicted the players of violating the cheating ordinance.
So what are their rights at this point?
What are their rights? Their rights are, I don't know exactly how far the Indian casino jurisdiction extends, but I don't know, pay the $8,000 fine if that's what it is, or spend a week in jail.
Wow.
Okay. And generally what we see with Indian casinos across the country is, frankly, you're walking in front of the chief, who is also the top judge. Now, in this case, it actually was a judge who had experience as a judge in the state court, this being Michigan. But you can run into what are essentially untrained justices of the peace. They've got you sitting in front of them. Let's say you're suing to get a jackpot in this Indian tribunal, and the Indian tribunal has the guy sitting at the head of the table who's going to make the decision, and that decision also determines whether he has steak tonight or macaroni and cheese.
Wow.
So what are your rights on an Indian casino?
You have none.
You can always tell it to the chief. Casinos.
Okay.
There are some Indian casinos or some tribes who have signed waivers of what you'd call sovereign immunity in order to have the right to gamble within their jurisdictions. It's untested. They may be able to say that's a treaty obligation. States can't enter into treaty obligations. Sure, we signed that. Yes, we have a lovely casino. But no, you can't sue us in state court. Come back to our tribal court.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
All right, changing subjects. Silver mining. You're in a casino. There's $20 on a machine that I'm walking by. I push the cash out button, take the $20 ticket, and walk away with it. Have I done anything illegal?
Generally, no.
Generally, no.
There, we're done. That's it for that conversation. Now, what you've just described is, you called it silver mining.
Silver mining because of the coins.
I call it slot walking.
Okay.
I've seen it referred to as slot walking in legal decisions.
Okay.
You've just described probably one of the biggest cases in gambling lore, which is the Romanski case, curiously also out of Michigan, where they picked her up, saying it was a crime, and we own that nickel that you just picked up, and you're under arrest, 73-year-old lady who came here on a bus on a senior citizen junket, and then promptly threw her out in the casino in the sunshine in the middle of the day after holding her against her will for a period of time. Over $600,000 was the jury verdict for her, because no, it's not theft.
It was a nickel?
It actually was a nickel.
Wonder what she would have gotten if it were a dime.
Yeah.
Well, if you read the decision, the Sixth Circuit knocked the punitive damages down to $600,000. Her damages were $219, and then there were $600,000 in punitive damages because of what the casino did.
For emotional stress.
No, punitive damages are... Can you swear on your radio? I won't. But you stinking casino, do you realize how evil and awful this is? Pay that lady $600,000 to teach your people that you don't roust little old ladies over a nickel. And the amazing thing about this case was, really, there were an entire cadre of security officers who were in court testifying. That was our money once it was left in that slot, and how dare she take it? Now, to add insult to injury, and this is the way punitive damages can go through the roof, the little old lady, Mrs. Romansky, Estella Romansky, picked up that nickel, went, oh, nice, a nickel. Apparently this was on film. Turned around, looked at the slot machine directly opposite, put the nickel in it, and dropped in 20 bucks of her own.
Oh, my God.
And they took her and tried to claim she was committing a crime. Greed's a funny animal, and you know where most of the greed lies in this business. Although, you know,
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure where it lies.
It's just amazing the stupidity in this business and how these places can make money in spite of themselves.
All right, I mean, so following up on this a little
bit. Well, let me
Okay, you want to follow up too.
I do want to point out, now what you're talking about is taking tickets that are abandoned or credits on a slot machine, because that's the way it's working today. As I understand it right now, the general thought and rule is if somebody has abandoned a machine, the credits on the machine and the payout on those credits is fair game, and nobody's going to be prosecuted. Abandoned, and here's the law. Abandoned property on private property does not become the property of the owner of the private property, but the property of the finder. So it's not casino money under the historic common law. It's whoever finds it. I do want to caution, though, because I understand that there are slot walkers out here right now that are pretty criminal, and they're sitting here and looking for the husband that goes down two machines to help their wife with a question she has, and are hitting that ticket payout and then grabbing it and heading out the door. If you have reason to believe that the person has not abandoned the ticket, if, for example, they are standing 8 feet away watching the machine while they are breaking down another 100 in the change machine, you're rightfully going to jail.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's not slot walking. If you don't know it's abandoned or you have reason to believe it's not abandoned, stay there until you're sure it's abandoned or go away.
So let's change a little bit. Let's assume it's a little bit more money. Let's say it's $500 and nobody's there. I cash it out and take it. And it happens that it was Richard who had left the money. And 20 minutes later, he hits his head, says, oh, another senior moment. And he goes to the casino and he says, I was playing that machine right there. Look on camera. There was $500 there. They look at the tape and they say, oops, it's that dancer guy. We know who he is. I'm somewhere else in the casino. And they come up to me and say, we think you have $500 that doesn't belong to you. What happens then?
You took $500 out of that machine and stayed in the casino?
Oh, so this is I'm an idiot for doing this. Okay, so if you're going to do this, you leave.
That's my way of dodging a hard question.
Okay.
I think that if you stand by your guns, you're going to have $500 in your pocket. I don't think anybody can say that at the time you took it, you had an intent to steal. Money wrongfully delivered to you, you're required to return to its rightful owner under the law now, not 30 years ago generally. But this was not money erroneously delivered to you. This is money Richard lost on the sidewalk and has been blowing around for 3 days or even an hour or what have you. And you're the guy who found the 20 and picked it up. I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know how that would be any different than if I dropped $500 out of my pocket onto the floor and came back and said, you know what, I dropped this money, and they looked at the tape and saw him pick it up, right? I mean, it's still me leaving the money and him picking it up.
The way you described it, now I'm thinking if they are able to backtrack it, you're going to have to give them back the money. I don't think it would be a criminal matter. You'd have to take him to court, show the video, and have a judge go pay that man.
I think it makes a big difference that I'm a I'm a civilian as opposed to you're taking the casino's money.
No.
No.
No. Hmm.
It makes a difference to the casino.
It makes
Did you have a question?
Yeah, no, I had a question. Okay. And this is a question actually that gets discussed a lot on the internet. Okay, let's say that I have a fake ID and I use it just to go in and get a player's card. Now I have a player's card in another name. Maybe I've been barred in the casino, not 86, maybe I've been barred, whatever, but I have a player's card in another name. I use that player's card and I earn a bunch of comps. And I now go benefit from those comps, whether I get free rooms, free meals, whatever. Am I committing fraud by using those comps?
The way you described it, I don't think so. I don't believe so. However, you may be subjecting yourself to an arrest and a dismissal because the law is quite clear that you can call yourself anything you want. That wouldn't be a false name, especially if you've played on it a number of times and at a number of different places.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But that, as matters now stand, we're trying to get into the United States Supreme Court on the very issue as to whether or not that provides probable cause to arrest you for fraud. Not convict you, arrest you. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has, in essence, said it does. I believe that they have rendered that decision at direct variance with the law in at least 36 other states, Nevada included.
Which 36 are those?
Sorry.
Thank you. This is and in fact, this is the this decision that we're trying to have the Supreme Court review is the first time in history that it appears that a court has said that it would be inappropriate to assume a name for a non-fraudulent transaction.
But what if he has ID to support? Do you have ID to support this name? Like a driver's license in this phony name?
No, no, no.
Well, what did you show to get the card to begin with?
A fake ID. Let's say it's not a driver's license.
You've just described the very case that we're dealing with.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. So it hasn't been decided by the courts yet.
Nobody has ever said it's illegal, including the Ninth Circuit. What they said is you can't sue the cop and win for false arrest.
Ah, okay.
Okay. The case, the charges on that arrest, which were kited like crazy by the fine state of Nevada.
What does that mean, kited? Usually that means bounced a check. What does this mean?
Well, kiting would be anything that makes the things soar beyond reason.
Okay.
Okay.
So including jaywalking or anything.
And, well, in this case, the person was charged with, I think, 8 or 9 different felonies.
Wow.
All over what you're talking about. And when push came to shove, all of them were dismissed, not even in front of a judge. The prosecutor looked at the law and said, wow, he's right. There's no crime here. And said, it's all gone. Okay? So, but the question then became when the patron sued the police officer for throwing him in jail and charging him with 8 felonies such that his bail went up to tens and tens of thousands of dollars. So he was held in jail for some length of time before he was able to get out. Was the police officer reasonable in making the arrest even though there was no crime? And the Ninth Circuit said yes.
Hmm.
No crime, but yeah, you can be arrested for it.
Huh.
So
see, there's a big difference between.
So go ahead and use your ID, Richard, all you want.
These are listeners who send these questions.
Oh, okay. As you bring this up, I do want to caution. There are 2 different statutes out there. One is using an ID to establish a false identity. And that one is a false identity is only an identity used for the purposes of committing a fraud. And under the case of Chen, which many people know, Chen versus Nevada Gaming Board, It is not fraud on a casino to play under an assumed name or even present a passport under that assumed name that is not an official passport. That's not fraud. So if that's not fraud, the assumed name is not a false identity. It is your true identity under an alias. The other statute, however, makes it a crime to present a fabricated driver's license. See the distinction?
Well, yeah, but...
Okay, it is always a crime in this state to present a driver's license that purports to be issued by the Nevada Department of Motor Vehicles and wasn't.
Right. But if you don't use that, I mean,
if you use Schmitty's 7-Eleven from Massachusetts with the big sign on the bottom that says not an official ID,
right,
that's not a driver's license. I'm also guessing, though, that not very many casinos are issuing players' cards on those anymore.
Anymore, yeah. It still happens.
Now, there are players who live in, say, Texas, and they have a Texas driver's license, and they come to Vegas enough that they also establish a Nevada driver's license. At some casinos that give better deals to locals, they'll use a Nevada address, which is frequently a post office box. And for casinos that give better deals to out-of-towners, they use a Texas driver's license in the same name.
Jeez, the stuff I learn on this show.
Yeah, can you imagine somebody would do that? Now, is having two... Now, officially, when you get a driver's license, you have to swear that you don't have any others. So, obviously...
But you can get a state ID. If you live in Texas and have a Texas driver's license, you can come to Nevada and get a state ID because, you know, you do business here and you want to be able to cash checks. And, you know, a state ID, you don't have to relinquish your driver's license to get a state ID.
Interesting you knew that. He's right.
Uh-huh. So... And presumably state ID, you can get a player's card with a state ID.
Sure.
It's an official state ID. It's for temporary residents.
It's also for people who don't drive, who need an official ID.
Yes, but the circumstance Bob's describing is the temporary residence ID. And there is no crime in having the Massachusetts driver's license and the Nevada identification as well.
But a Massachusetts driver's license and a Nevada driver's license for people who did not do it the right way, just...
Well, now you're asking for minutiae within the statute. I think you're probably okay under that crime statute, but there is likely another one out there for false swearing. And if they actually make you sign an affidavit under penalty of perjury that you are not residing in any other state and do not have a valid driver's license in any other state, then you're going to be subject to a perjury prosecution. But that goes back to the CTRs, okay? How does that go back to the CTRs? Because somewhere near Pensacola or something like that, there is a room that is really an airplane hangar that has CTRs stacked to the roof. There are 32 billion of them. And who's going to go look for it, or who's going to go try and find out if you have a Massachusetts driver's license and a Nevada driver's license?
But CTRs are on their electronic data, and they can be sorted and stuff like that. It's not like they have to look through all these pieces of paper.
I don't think CTRs are anywhere near as electronic as you think.
Uh-huh. I think they're 42% electronic.
Actually, but you know what? Something really important.
No, I think they're cataloged such that they can be found and dropped into an electronic format if necessary.
Something really important I'd like to caution listeners about. It's one thing, all this talk about state IDs and fake IDs. If you, say, have a name change and go get a new passport in your new name, do not keep the old passport in the old name. The feds are very, very touchy about people having two passports in two different names. So that
Although
can get you into
ways
big
you
trouble.
You can get two passports in two names, and it's legal. But well, I'm not going to go into that. What I will point out
a woman
with,
getting married, for
what
example.
What I will point out with what Richard just said, if you go, this would be something particularly important to gamblers. you can use any name you want as long as it's not for fraudulent purposes, as we've discussed, and your true name can change, or you can even have more than one true name, all right? When you enlist the official name change, rather than the common law name change, the official name change allowed by the state under their statutes, that new name is your one and only name.
How do you get a common law name change?
I'm Bob Nersesian. Do you think there's a document other than a business card out there anywhere that says Bob Nersesian on it in the government database?
Just your birth certificate.
No, it says Robert A.
Okay. So I see. So that's
and,
a common law
name. To my dry cleaner and to valets that know me often, I'm Bob Ness.
Hmm.
Okay? Because valets don't want to spell Nersesian. All right. But the law is that you do not need a government imprimatur to change your name. It's just that simple. You can say, henceforth, I will be Richard Jones, not Richard
Martin. But you
can't
get a driver's license in that.
Eventually,
name.
You should be able to. And in fact, I think there are ways. Nobody's tested it yet. I'm pretty sure that if you have actually done that, I could get you there. Here's the example. Anybody here read Vin Soprinowicz on Sundays? He's an RJ columnist. He has been Vin Soprinowicz since he was 5. His name is Vincent Soprinowicz. He has lived in Nevada, 25 years. His driver's license has always said Vin Soprinowicz.
Uh-huh.
With the federal ID laws, he went back this year to renew his driver's license, and they refused. Sorry, there's no Vin Soprinowicz in existence. He goes, here's my old driver's license that you issued. It says Vin Soprinowicz. They said, well, we're not doing that anymore. He goes, what I don't want you to do anymore is pretend I'm Vincent. I'm Vin. I've been Vin for 38 years. That, I think, you could test, and there are ways to get a driver's license other than in the name for him, Vincent Soprinowicz. Hmm. But it is litigation, and it has to go a long way. And I think one of the things that's driving all of this right now is this whole federal true ID thing.
Yeah.
Because Big Brother wants to know where you are and what you're doing at all times.
I wanted to talk about cruise ships. Does anybody regulate them? What do you have any recourse? What if you suspect cheating has happened on a cruise ship?
In the casino.
In the casino, yeah. I
sue at your port of call and sue them for fraud. And if you get a judgment and they say, neener, 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 we don't live here, next time the ship comes into the port, hire the sheriff to put a writ of attachment on the boat.
Wow.
Okay.
So if I'm going to take, and I've had no problem with Norwegian Cruise Line, but I'm going on a Norwegian Cruise Line out of, I think, Cape Canaveral in a month. If something happened in the casino, I would, and they're going to stop in, say, Nassau. I don't really know where we're going to stop in Shirley Range. So I would put this, I would file against them in Cape Canaveral. In Nassau, any place I wanted, any place they stopped, what?
Any place where all or part of the cause of action arose or where the defendant can be found. Obviously.
If they can be found at Cape Canaveral every Saturday.
There you go. If they are in the state and you sue and you serve the managing, I don't know what the laws in Florida are, but the managing agent of an office, which is actually a business outlet.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the sheriff or a process server down to the dock, onto the boat, and hand the captain the summons. I think you've got Norwegian Cruise Lines in the courts in Florida.
Huh. And same would be true if you were handcuffed by security or any kind of shenanigans in the casino.
Right. And in fact, you bring this up, it's curious. I didn't see this question coming, but we're actually looking at this right now for an AP who paid all this money for a cruise, got on the boat, they're a day out, and they backed him off a blackjack. Yeah. Well, that was part of the amenities he paid for. How dare they?
Oh, I see.
He paid to enjoy the casino, which is one of the accoutrements that goes with the cruise. Uh-huh. And then they said, guess what? Everybody else here gets to, but you don't. It's like they took his bathroom away.
Uh-huh.
I like it.
Oh, good. Will you keep us posted as to how this works out? There's a lot of people.
Invite me back, start paying me. I'll let you into the courtroom.
Can we do half of that?
I also wanted to ask you if you're familiar with the case in the Trump Marina where they took the player's ace away. Do you know about this
case?
Yes. Okay. And so, again, from a listener, they were asking, do you know what's going on with that case? And the Trump Marina has been sold, right? So there's a new owner, and how does that affect things?
Somebody lost their ace in Atlantic City?
A player made a large bet, got an ace.
We're suing them. That's my case.
I didn't know you could practice in New Jersey.
Well, I have associated. I am the associated counsel for the New Jersey lawyer.
Great. Well, then you tell him what happened.
No.
Oh.
Not right now.
Oh, you can't talk about it. Okay.
Okay. Good. Okay. So. But next time you come back.
But obviously, obviously, we feel that there's a pretty good case there.
Yeah.
For outright.
It was pretty egregious.
From my perspective, the police officer. The state police officer who actually assisted in putting the gentleman out of the casino should have been arresting everybody in that casino with a Trump Marina shirt on for robbery, theft, I don't care, simple larceny. I think the present value was like $3,200 on that bet.
Yeah.
Grand larceny. Yeah. It was theft outright. They stole it.
Yeah.
Good. Too bad he can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, I can't talk about the proceedings. I can.
Okay.
And that's my opinion, as I said.
So we have about 4 minutes left.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I'm seeing 17. You're going to cut me short again.
Well, we got commercials.
We got commercials, and it's.
I'm teasing.
The whole station cuts us off at 5 minutes till. So, and then we have a few things to do before then. On the. MGM Grand, they had some, somebody presented some chocolate chips, which are $5,000 casino chips, and the casino said, we don't think you got this legally while playing in our casino, so we're going to confiscate this chip, and we're not going to pay you for it.
I wish the Gaming Control Board would take control, like the name implies, and start telling those casinos to read the regulations and make them stop this garbage. Okay. The regulation says you will not pay a chip. You will not redeem a chip for somebody you know is not a patron. It is not think might not be a patron. It is not can't prove they were a patron. It is if the casino knows they are not a patron. And these games are just nothing other than these casinos across this entire state, because it's not just MGM. Playing this game of you have to show your ID and you have to prove to us you're a patron. No, you want to not cash that chip? You prove to me that you know that I'm not a patron, because that's what the regulation says. And the Gaming Control Board has got to get in and start taking care of this, because those regulations also say that chip is a bearer instrument of value. And for these casinos to be playing that game, let's go back to that marina example. This is theft. This is organized theft by a publicly traded corporation to pretend that regulation says something that it doesn't, my opinion.
We
should ask him about something that he might feel strongly about.
Yeah. The particular one that I was thinking about on these chocolate chips, Nolan Dalla, who is a well-known poker player, apparently got the chip from another poker player at Bellagio in payment for a debt. He went over to the MGM. MGM wouldn't cash it.
Did he admit that?
He did. He told the
MGM. That's different.
He told the MGM, they asked for his name and where he got it, blah, blah, blah. And so he apparently said, you know, I'm a poker player, I'm blah, 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 and I got this at Bellagio, and it was from, he named the player. And they confiscated the chip. He did not get paid. He took it to Gaming Control.
Gaming Control said, sorry, Charlie. So
I would disagree with Gaming Control's decision. He should be able to hold on to the chip, get it back to Nola, and Nola go cash it, whatever the guy's name is. I don't have any understanding why that would be MGM's chip. And I do understand that some of this was going on with some casinos in town where they were making the patron prove that they were a patron, and that's backwards. I want to correct something I said a moment ago in my ire, all right? In those circumstances, the board did get involved and said, pay the chip. If they stood by the fact I am a patron, they don't know I'm not. But that's not the rule. The rule is you cash chips, and nobody is bringing these casinos to task for forcing you to go to gaming to get your money. Now,
and you can show a player's card, which proves that you're a patron, but if they don't have a record of you receiving the $5,000 chip, they're not going to cash it.
I know.
So you've proven you're a patron.
I mean, I understand that, and I agree with you, too. I think patron is not – it doesn't say – the statute specifically says patron. It does not say unless you know they didn't win that money. It is unless you know they are not a patron.
Yeah.
So I would – have a video. I mean, I don't know, the patron's not defined yet, but to me it seems that if you can show them a cell phone video of you putting a quarter into a quarter machine, you're now a patron.
Right.
What is a patron? But that is an aside. Let's say they go the other way. It is still the casino's burden in order to refuse cashing that chip that they know that you are not a patron. So in the circumstance Bob gave, this guy walked up there and said, hi, I'm not a patron. I want to cash this chip. That casino would have been violating the regulation to cash that chip.
I don't know that he said that to start with. They just refused. They took it and refused to pay him. And then in the discussion, he identified himself. But we'll have Nolan back on the show, and we'll let him tell that story. We want to thank you for being here. Should somebody wish your assistance in a legal matter relating to casinos, how do they get a hold of you?
First, pull out their wallet.
Pull out their wallet. Good.
Yes. All right.
Chocolate chips will work.
Chocolate chips will get you something around 12 hours of work.
Uh-huh. So math major sounds like it's $400 an hour. Okay.
Wow, I was thinking $450. You're better than me, apparently.
Okay, so good. So that once they pull out their wallet, you'll find you in the phone book. What do they do?
Nersessian, go on the internet. It's Nersessian and Sankiewicz, and Sankiewicz is my wife. She always gets a little down in the dumps because she doesn't get the publicity, and it's really hard for her because she's not like me. She's a good lawyer.
Okay. Should we have her on the show to tell the truth about you? We can do that. Would that be would that be good?
I'm telling you, she does so much of the heavy lifting, and people think it's all me just because I have a big mouth.
Well, good.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
All right.
I'll let you get on to your commercials.
Thank you. I enjoy having Bob on. He's never at a loss for words, although he did let us get 10 minutes into the show, and he didn't speak up at all.
Right.
I did not understand that at all, although he's still in the room, so he may jump in at any time. We have several sponsors for the show. The M Casino has 10,000 machines, or 10,000 games on machines that return more than 99%. That is more than anybody anywhere else in the world in terms of good machines. In October, which starts in a couple days, they're going to have double points for video poker, 5x points on reels on Halloween. So I suggest you do not, you can go in costume if you want, but if you go wear a mask, you're asking for trouble. Although there is one Advantage player who dressed up as Santa Claus one day, but he still got kicked out. Good. South Point is hosting the video poker tournament this weekend for videopoker.com. And so I will be teaching a class and doing well in the video poker tournament starting at 10:30 in the Brunswick room. So if you want to be part of that, you are welcome to do so. The Amp Casino has different promotions depending on which day of the week they have. Mondays, it's a magic multiplier. You don't know what your multiplier is until you get there. So for video poker, it can be the 1X, 2X, or 3X, and slots can go up to 10X. Most players get at least one 3X multiplier on one of the Mondays in the month. That it was been the pattern for the last 2 months. They're having it again in October, and we don't know what the pattern is yet in October because we haven't had it. The Wednesdays is a drawing. You can earn up to 5 tickets, pick 3 lottery numbers, and you match them. You can win up to $5,000. On Fridays, they have hot seat promotions where you play up to $250, coin in, and then have your card in during the promotions at 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10, and they're going to call some names and give away $18,000 during the day. At the Palms, on the weekends, they have a Choose Your Destiny promotion where we've talked about it a lot. You can get a guaranteed $1,500, or you can gamble it up with a expected value of $1,667. Now, Richard and I are strongly recommending you take the $1,667, and as an indication of how much influence we have in the gaming community, last weekend there were 10 winners, and of those 10, zero took our advice, and all 10 took the $1,500. What a bunch of chickens won at the Palms last week.
Could you offer people $1,525 and take their spot?
Probably, although...
The Palms may not like that?
The Palms may not like that, and I don't want to jeopardize the my status there or the sponsorship of the show, so I'm not planning to do it. But
some enterprising listener, though.
But I actually offered to somebody to split, and we'll both do it, and we both had won, and let's both do it, and we'll split, whatever comes out. And he said, "No, I'm taking the $1,500. Period. You can take whatever you want, whatever you get." So. Anyway, we didn't. On Monday, Wednesday, Friday, they have PEWs, play, earn, and win. And for tomorrow, which is the last day of this month, on Monday, Wednesday, Friday anyway, it is an Italian-themed. Now, before we go, there's a backgammon tournament. Now, we got a minute and a half. Tell us about that.
Well, the California State Backgammon Championship is December 2nd through the 4th. This is... one of the oldest tournaments, I think, in the United States. Been going on well over 20 years.
Oldest backgammon tournament.
Backgammon tournament, yeah. And run by Pat Gibson, who's one of the good guys.
Yeah, I like Pat.
And it's being held at the Four Points Sheraton, which is by LAX. So for you backgammon players out there, get a hold of Pat and go to the California State Backgammon Championships.
I started out, backgammon was my first gambling game of choice. Are there still professional backgammon players out there?
There are. In Europe in particular, Europe and Japan, actually, there's been a big surge in backgammon popularity. So
we should get a backgammon player on the show.
Well, I have feelers out to a number of them, so I'm sure we will have somebody within
good.
The next
with
month.
All the computerized helps, I'm sure backgammon is a much different game today than it was when I played 30 years ago.
It is.
All right. So next week, our guest is Darren Hay, who is, you won't recognize that name because it's a made-up name, but he is a well-known video poker player, plays mainly in the Atlantic City area. He posts regularly on VP Free and is respected there. And we're going to ask him a lot about how video poker is different in Atlantic City than it is in Las Vegas. He's a personal friend, and I'm looking forward to that. So we got about 5 seconds left. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard W. Munchkin. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard W. Munchkin are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.